Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the Job Growth, Energy, Affordability, Policy, and Finance Committee to order. Today is Tuesday, February 28th. First order of business is approval of the minutes dated February 21st. Representative Howell moves approval of the minutes.
Absolutely.
Any discussions, changes, or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Members, the first bill we're going to crank out really quick here is House File 705. The chair will move House File 705 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Right? Members, I'll just be honest, this is a vehicle bill. That's what it is. I'm moving the bill to committee. I don't think there's much you'll see opposed to it. Just it's a vehicle bill. Representative Thiessen, we're moving on House File 705 right now. I believe the A1 amendment is yours. And Representative Thiessen, I just announced to the committee, this bill is a vehicle bill. That's the only reason I'm passing it. So it's up to you if you want to move the amendment or not.
Sure.
All right. Representative Thiessen moves the A1 amendment. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Say nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Is there any discussion or public discussion or testimony from members in the committee on this vehicle bill? Seeing none, the chair, Representative Sundin.
Excuse me. I just scooted in. This is Representative West's bill here.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. Oh, by all means, go ahead.
That's fine. Thank you.
With seeing no additional discussion, the chair renews his motion to have House File 705 as amended, recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. All right, Representative West, you're up next.
I'd like to move House File 1638.
Representative West moves House File 1638 for possible inclusion in a later bill. Representative West, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair and members. House File 1638 is a $200,000 appropriation per year to help the grant to the Helmets to Hard Hats initiative.
And Representative West, is this the first time you presented a bill to this committee?
Yes. I can bring treats at a later date. I was too focused on...
Are we taking the bill down yet this year, Mr. Chair?
No. Are you serious?
I moved to lay it over.
Just remember to the public so you know that there's a... It's not even unwritten. It's like a written policy now. When you are before a committee for the first time as a freshman, you bring treats to dispense not only to the members, but to the audience as well. I'm thinking at some point here we're going to hear a collective boo from the audience.
Mr. Chair.
Representative West, I assume that you will rectify these matters tomorrow in tomorrow's committee hearing. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, I'm certainly glad we're not taking a vote on this.
Yes. Representative West, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As I was saying, $200,000 grant per year to the Hard Hats program to assist in recruiting and getting veterans into apprenticeship programs. And I have Kyle Macarios with me to go into detail on the program as well.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Kyle Macarios with the Carpenters Union. Work here in the St. Paul office. I'm very proud to be here supporting Representative West's bill. It will help more returning military veterans find rewarding careers in the union construction trades. I'd just like to make a few comments because we have a couple other testifiers who will talk to you about the great impact that Helmets to Hard Hats is making all over the country as well as here in Minnesota. But, Mr. Chairman, let me just lay the groundwork with a quick fact. According to a study released last October by the Midwest Economic Policy Institute, veterans make up 4.9% of the Minnesota workforce. But they have a much higher concentration in our trades. In fact, 9.6% of the construction workforce in Minnesota are military veterans. That's twice as many veterans in the construction trades per capita as the rest of the workforce. And the union Helmets to Hard Hats program is one reason why. Mr. Chairman, the members, as you may know, it's Building Trades Day on the Hill today, and we've got members of several different unions in the audience with us. If I may, I would like to ask any of our members in the audience who have served in our nation's military to please stand and be recognized. Mr. Chairman, committee members, if you pass this bill, we'll have even more next year. Now I'd like to introduce two guests who don't spend very much time in front of legislative committees. First, you'll hear from Daryl Roberts. Mr. Roberts is Executive Director of Helmets to Hard Hats, the national program, to explain how the program works. Then you'll hear from an apprentice who is currently enrolled in our program. His name is Ernest Whitney. He's a constituent of Representative Neuberger's. Ernest is a 17-year combat veteran, currently in the reserves, who's also in his second year of his carpentry apprenticeship. I'd like to introduce Mr. Roberts.
Are they going to testify? I'm sorry.
It's the guy sitting
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Daryl Roberts.
Thank you. Please continue with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you for allowing us to speak today and be here on behalf of the Helmets to Hard Hats program. The Helmets to Hard Hats program was created over 14 years ago. The sole purpose was to take a look at our returning veterans, National Guard and Reservists, and help them find quality careers in construction. Now, we do this by reaching out to the military, to market to the military, and say, this is what it means to be an apprentice. This is what it means to get into the construction industry. This is what it means what your life will look like with quality benefits, pay, and skills that will not go away. Over the last 14 years, we've helped over 22,000 veterans make this transition. We have a database of over 150,000. But every time we implement a state program, we've seen those numbers double or triple. And that's on reporting, that's on counseling, mentoring. When you have a state rep that's available for these veterans, these National Guard reservists, the person can call the person on the ground, the veteran can call the person on the ground and speak to them in regards to what is it now, what's it like, what can I expect, what kind of help can I expect. And this has been going well for the last 14 years, and anytime we can see a state program improve it so we can see more veterans sign up with these careers, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. And just as an example, some other states that are running these programs, do you have examples of where states that you would say are doing it the best or maybe better than others that we can kind of model or try to rip off or copy?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I, myself, before I became the executive director, I ran the state program in Pennsylvania. I came back as I'm a Navy vet, and then I was a Pennsylvania Army National Guardsman, and I'm a sheet metal worker by trade. And I ran the state program for about a year and a half, and then I went to the national program to run the national effort. New York State has reps as well as Washington State, Alaska, and New Jersey.
Any other questions for the testifier? Thank you. Representative Sundin.
Sure. Certainly, thank you for your work here. I noticed when all the veterans stood up, I noticed one thing that stood out clear is a bell. They all look like me. You know, they're all white males, pretty much. I didn't see if there was any females out there. Anything. Okay, good. I'm glad we have one. Thank you for your service as well. I've got a son that has a military career going, and very proud of me. Just made his E9, so it's really appreciate the dedication of the veterans here. But I'm just wondering, nationwide, out of the 22,000 there, how diverse is that group?
That's one data point I do not collect, gender or minority status. What I can give at a later date, I can certainly provide, is the minority status inside the military itself, the percentages. But when we market, all our market material have people of color, different gender, so forth and so forth. We certainly welcome everyone.
Mr. Gregorios, could we get that information maybe and share it with the committee legislative assistant, and we'll share it with the
email.
Thank you. Representative Sundin.
Thank you. I'm good for now.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Next testifier, please. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, committee, or Mr. Chairman. I'm Ernest Whitney. I am currently a 17-year combat vet. I have 12 years of active, 5 years in the reserves as a steelworker first class in the U.S. Seabees. I live in Rice, Minnesota, and I had worked for Olympic Drywall Systems. I just finished a job helping to build an addition at St. Paul College. I met the Carpenters Union representative at a career fair 13 months ago on a drill weekend. Before I joined the union, I had bounced from job to job making $10 to $12 an hour. I currently make $21.79 an hour, and I also have the ability to use my GI Bill. I currently am helping someone else transition in to Helmets to Hard Hats.
Great. Super. And Mr. Carrios, do you know, in terms of, like, we hear a lot of stuff about the labor market right now, What is the overall status of the market in Minnesota right now? I know we've got individuals retiring, baby boomers. How would you, just in a brief synopsis of where we're at, what does this mean for Minnesota's competitiveness to fill those positions?
Thanks for that question, Mr. Chairman. As many know, we are heavily competing for a shrinking workforce in the construction industry. We have a lot of need right now for entry-level tradesmen and women coming into our apprenticeships. The apprenticeship programs are growing, so there's a kind of strong demand, not just for entry-level people, but also opportunities. If you think about the construction industry, the people that are retiring right now are not just able-bodied, journey-level tradespeople. These are senior supervisors. These are foremen and superintendents on projects. So not only is there a need for people coming in the apprenticeship program, but there are opportunities for career advancement within the trades, too. So we think that being able to compete for our returning military veterans is certainly one way we need to fill those jobs.
Thank you. Any additional questions or comments for the testifier? Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ernest, thanks for coming down. It's good to see you. And Kyle, thank you for this program. It's a great bill. I wish we could have seen this, you know, years ago, but it's a good start. And I just put my name in to be a co-author to it. So thank you for what you're doing, and you did a good job, Ernest.
Thank you, sir.
New father, Representative Metza, is making an appearance. Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's just a cameo. My wife needs me home. tonight I came down for an important local meeting at the IRRRB, but wanted to check in. I saw this bill coming forward, and I think it's a great bill. And just wanted to ask one quick kind of leading question for you, Kyle. Do you need a college degree or any kind of education to get in and start building your hours towards an apprenticeship to join the Carpenters Union?
Mr. Makarios.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Metza. Congratulations, by the way. That's a great question. We'll get you an application for apprenticeship. This is an important question. The qualifications for each trade differ slightly, but for the most part, you need a high school diploma or GED. You need to pass a drug test. And if you are a returning military veteran, that's all you need. Helmets of Hard Hats ensures direct entry into the apprenticeship program, so they automatically qualify for entrance with a high school diploma or GED and a positive or a clean drug test. And we'll get them right in the apprenticeship program, match them up with an employer, and get them off and working and earning money and training.
Representative
Metzel? One quick follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And say you've built skills in the military and feel like you have a good handle on how to put stuff together properly, can read blueprints from your experience in the service, can you test in and maybe enter a higher pay grade with that skill set?
Mr. Makarios.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Metza, great question. Yes, again, according to this, of course, varies by program, but most programs do allow for entry kind of at various steps along the program. So depending on prior experience on a case-by-case basis, we can grant a number of hours of credit or someone can come in as a second-year or third-year apprentice based on their prior experience in the military or outside the military, frankly.
Any additional comments or questions for the testifier? Well, Representative Sundin.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, it's not for the testifier, it's for Representative Metza. You had a good question about college degrees there, or working towards a college degree. I don't know if you're aware of it, but the painters actually have an apprenticeship program and training program where you can actually get your associate degree. So all the trades have their programs, but we've got a better one. So.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's great to see all the tradespeople here today supporting this bill. And this morning at the IBEW gathering, we asked everybody who had been in the service to raise their hand. And I guess I'd like to know how many of the tradesmen here today. Sorry, I came in late. I was presenting. But I think it's great. You know, the construction industry is the perfect fit for so many of our military veterans. So I just appreciate the you bring in this bill, and it's a great program. Thanks.
And as we all know, tradesmen are on time, Representative Rarick. This is a public hearing. Are there any members of the public in favor or voice concerns with the bill? Representative West, do you have any closing comments?
Thank you.
And hold on. Representative Sundin?
Thanks for all the brotherly love in the room today. This is a good bill, but it's incomplete, and I've got to share this with the author. I've been paging through the Department of Employment and Economic Development handbook on equal opportunity, and the only thing I can come up with is when you get a grant, you have to collaborate with the Office of Economic Equity and Opportunity to assist businesses developing, hiring, and contracting practices that will expand opportunities for workers of color and businesses owned by people of color in Minnesota. That's all I can find, which is fine and dandy, but that leaves out a lot of other people. I know building trades unions are fairly inclusive with their membership and their recruiting because that's what I do in my real life. And I'm just wondering if we do pass this bill today, that'd be okay. But there's another bill moving through the system, and I'm hoping that the chair would give me a hearing on this at a later date. And this other bill, if I may, states grant funds must be used to accomplish this purpose without regard to race, color, creed, religion, national origin, marital status, disability, public assistance, sexual orientation, and family status. So it's a little more inclusive and compels somebody that doesn't necessarily have the language with their apprenticeship program to do the correct steps here. I'm just wondering if I vote for yours, will you vote for mine?
Representative Sundin, just to be clear, the bill before us actually is from the Department of Labor and Industry, not their deed. So I don't know if you saw that or not. Representative West, any closing comments?
Well, Representative Sundin, I'm happy to include that. We're just laying it over today, but I'm happy to talk with you and see if we include that language that you're talking about. I'm happy to do that. And thank you for the time.
That's your closing speech? That's it?
That is it. That's our home run.
With that, Representative West renews his motion to have House File 1638 laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill. Thank you, Representative West. Thank you, Mr. McNarris. Is Pamela here? We'll go with Rosenfeld here.
Yeah, I do.
Take your phone. Yeah. Yes. Representative Thiessen, do you see Representative Rosenthal?
1793.
He was here earlier.
Yeah. Okay, we'll go to Representative Baker right now. Okay.
His wife.
Representative Baker, why don't we take you next then? Hold on, we've got this one on. Representative Baker moves that House File 984 be considered for possible inclusion in a later bill. And Representative Baker, is the A1 amendment your amendment?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair. I'd like to introduce that as well.
Representative Baker moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the form that he would like. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Baker, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Just briefly, the amendment that you agreed to that I'm grateful for help along the way from the last stop to this stop was to make sure that we told our folks that are actually purchasing fuel for their vehicles and their trucks to make sure that they all know that this gas tax bill that I'm working on, the gas tax transparency bill, make sure people know where all the gas tax funds are going. It's constitutionally dedicated to roads and bridges, and so that's what the amendment did. So, ladies and gentlemen, this really just, it's a transparency bill, like I mentioned. We want to make sure there's a little sticker on every dispensing pump in the state of Minnesota that states how much money they're paying currently, along with their price of fuel that is dedicated to roads and bridges that is part of the tax that you're paying. A lot of us, if we go to a store, in a hardware store, we purchase a wrench or we buy a wheelbarrow somewhere, usually on your receipt you see what your gas tax, your sales tax is, excuse me, your sales tax, and you see what that is. It's very clear. In a gas situation, I don't think residents really know what they're paying. And so there's been a lot of discussion in the last couple of years, and there will always be discussions about how do we properly fund our roads and bridges. And always the conversation comes up, is a gas tax part of that conversation or not? But what I think is important is this bill really just tells our Weights and Measures Department of Commerce that already goes around and checks the dispensing units to make sure of their accuracy. They go out about once a year to most gas stations. And they put a little sticker on there that tells them that when the last time is that they've been there to make sure it's working properly. So what this bill does, Mr. Chair and members, is that it has a very small fiscal note to it. We are going to mail out about 60,000 labels around the state of Minnesota to make sure that the owners of these pumps will put a little sticker on them that says whatever the current rate of the tax is. Currently it's about 47 cents a gallon for federal and state tax is what we're paying now or what we're subsidizing our fuel for. And so they'll put them out the first run. And then any time after that, if there's an increase someday, then the Weights and Measures Department will have those stickers printed, and they will just handle those themselves when they go out to the pumps. That's really as simple as the bill is. It's just telling people about what it is they're paying now for tax when it comes to gasoline. I don't have any testifiers that I know of, Mr. Chair. There's somebody here from the Department of Commerce if we have questions. This is supported by the owners and operators of many of the gas stations around the state of Minnesota. I've been working a lot with the Petroleum Marketers Association, and we'll take any questions, Mr. Chair.
This is a public hearing. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns with the bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion and move to member questions. Questions or comments from members of the committee? Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Baker, actually, gasoline taxes are constitutionally dedicated to roads, bridges, and snowmobile trails. So why the omission in the language in your amendment? Why not fully, if we're going to inform Minnesotans when they pay gasoline tax what they're paying for, why not provide them with the full information? Why be selective?
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, that's a great question. I got this from the department, and I will kind of follow up on that. I think we maybe just, that was a simple oversight on that, but I think it's a great point. I'll make sure that where it is going, we want to make sure that everybody's clear so that they all know what's being supported by this tax. So thank you very much for that feedback.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Baker. I think many people are surprised to find that snowmobile trails are subsidized out of gas tax, and they don't expect that, and it's, you know, fair to let the public know where their tax money is going.
I agree.
So thank you.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Representative Baker, on page 1, line 6, you call for a 12-point font or greater. Do you have any idea how big this sign is going to be? Is it going to be 4 by 6 or 1 inch by 2 inch? Because I've seen the stickers when they do their weights and measures. It's about an inch tall, maybe an inch and a half by 3 inches. And I had to look for it. My concern is, and then I'll let you answer that one. Do you have any idea how big these stickers are going to be?
Representative Baker.
Actually, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Mahoney. This is a rough idea of the size. We are still kind of in the prototype form of this, and we're not sure exactly, but this is roughly the size that you would see on each dispensing unit. This is about a 12-point font, the smallest part of it. We just want to make sure it wasn't so small you couldn't read it and so big that it takes over the pump. There are already about a dozen stickers on a gas pump. So we are very aware of that, and we want to make sure that we're sensitive to that. So this is an approximate idea.
Representative Bonney.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Baker, you know, here's a bit of a problem I have with this is, although all of our constituents are really, really smart and they're really above average and everything else, I don't know that many of them will discern between the federal and the gas tax. And what you're going to do with this bill is blame me for 46 cents worth of tax when it's really only, what is it, 14 or 16 or 18 cents?
Or 28.
You know, so why are you going to get me in trouble?
Representative Baker.
Transparency is tough, isn't it? I know. I mean, and here's my answer to that. We're going to split it up so we actually tell them what the federal tax is and what the state tax is. Currently, the state tax is 28 and a half cents. So they'll see the total, but they will see them how they broke out. So if they're going to be mad at us for the 28 and a half cents, we have to own that.
Yep.
And we have to support it. That's how that's going to be split out.
Representative Hunt.
Nope, that should do it for me.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, I would say, too, that a lot of the gas pumps in my district already have a sticker on there telling us where the different taxes go. But to the snowmobile question, something that's near and dear to my heart, there's not very many electric snowmobiles. They buy gasoline, lawnmowers, and so forth. So some of the things that the gas tax is used for is very well spent, in particular in the snowmobile industry. Thank you.
Representative Sundin and Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author. I'm just wondering, almost every day we get to hear about putting Minnesota at a competitive disadvantage with the surrounding states in one form or another. And when we talk about gas tax, you know, that enters into it. I'm just wondering if you're going to label Minnesota or have labels of Minnesota on there, it would be just as easy to include Iowa, Wisconsin, Ontario, and the Dakotas on that as well. So we can compare ourselves with the neighboring states to see if we're really crippling our businesses or not.
Representative Baker?
I'm not sure if that was a question or if that was a statement, but you know, what we don't do already is we don't tell neighboring states what the sales tax are for other hard goods either. So I think we'll just leave this as to what we charge for Minnesota taxes.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And this question isn't necessarily for the bill author, but if somebody from Commerce is here talking about the signs on gas pumps, the pumps back home that are blender pumps, on the E15 pump it says only for flex fuel vehicles, and that's not correct as far as I know, that it's good for any vehicle newer than 2001. So my question is, pardon?
Hold on.
So why is that sticker on the E15 dispenser that is only for a flex fuel vehicle? If anybody could answer that question.
Is there anyone from the Department of Commerce who can elaborate on that? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm John Kelly from the Department of Commerce. We came here prepared to testify on the bill itself. I can definitely check with our weights. I'm not from the Weights and Measures Division. I'm from the Government Affairs Division, but I will check with our director and get you that answer, Representative.
If you could, please just share it with the committee legislative assistant, and she'll share it with everyone in the committee. That way we all get the answer. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson, did you have a follow-up? Representative Anderson, you don't have a follow-up? You're done?
Waiting for the answer.
Okay. Representative, any other comments? Oh, we have more expert testimony.
Hey, how you doing, Kevin?
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Kevin Toma, and I work for the members of the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association. And to answer Representative Anderson's question, that sticker is a Federal Trade Commission sticker, so it's not a Minnesota sticker, and it has to do with the reed vapor pressure. That E15 does not have a waiver like E10 does, so at certain times during the year, the reed vapor pressure requires that sticker to be on that pump.
What's the reed vapor pressure?
It's 718, I believe.
No, I mean, like, what is it?
Don't hold me.
What does that mean?
Reed vapor pressure is what comes out of the tailpipe and the emission numbers that are acceptable by the EPA that comes out of the tailpipe. And I'm not a chemist, so I don't know what goes into that number.
Gotcha. Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair and Mr. Toma. I had kind of heard that, but as I understand, that reed vapor pressure prohibition only is good for the summer months. And if that's correct, why is that sign on the pumps year-round?
The test fire? The test fire?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, that's a Federal Trade Commission, and that's the current requirement. And by the way, that requirement has changed, and the wording of it has changed several times since I've been with the association, and it may change again.
Okay. Representative Anderson, maybe you could send a tweet to President Trump. He may respond. any other questions or comments? Representative Fabian, then Mahoney. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That the only time he'll respond is at 3 o'clock in the morning. Never mind.
Yeah, yeah.
My question, kind of, I was looking at one of the there's an estimate of about $1,700 to send this out, or no, $2,700 for mailing costs to 60,000 service stations. Does that make sense to you? Seeing how first class mailing is 50 cents, I was doing some quick math on the phone and on the handheld computer. It's about 60 grand, about 30 grand. So maybe I'm missing something here.
We have more expert testimony.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the funding, the money for the postage is for each, would mail the stickers for each station. The 60,000 is the amount of fuel dispensers in the entire state, so the pump. So it would be one envelope with enough stickers for each pump at the gas station.
Seeing no additional discussion, Representative Baker, any closing comments?
You know, I just think it's a great transparency bill. This came from a constituent back in Wilmer, had a lot of questions when we were talking about the gas tax and what was important to him, and should we talk about that more? And he said, well, you know what, we ought to just tell people what they're paying already, and then we'll talk about it. So I think it was a really good idea. That's it, Mr. Chair.
With that, Representative Baker renews his motion to have House File 984 as amended laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill. Thank you, Representative Baker.
Thank you.
Representative Rosenthal. Representative Thiessen?
I'll move the bill, sure.
Representative Thiessen moves House File 879 for possible inclusion in a later bill. Welcome to the committee, Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House File 879 is a small step in the growing need in vulnerable and seniors in our communities. What it does is it allocates $500,000 for fraud prevention in radio, papers, training in nursing homes, training caregivers, and reporting back to the legislature by January of next year. And just on a personal level, my mother is in her early 90s. She's a caregiver who's, you know, capable. But she saw in her local newspaper that, you know, there's a guy that buys watches and silver and stuff. And she punched it into the computer, and this business actually came up, and they thought it was real. And this guy was just a con artist and basically walked away with a house full of silver and other items. And this is happening every day in Minnesota, and it's just going to get worse as our community ages. I don't know if you get calls like I do at night saying, I'm calling because I'm going to lower your credit card rate. And I'll say, what credit card? And they'll say, Visa. I say, I don't have a Visa card. I have American Express. And they say, we do that too. And I just hang up. And you get the same kind of calls wanting to lower your, you know, what was the last one I got? There's a bug on your computer. You have to send $500 or, you know, we're going to take it down. And these kinds of things. And so it's important right now. These frauds are happening every day. We read about them practically every day. And as this problem is just going to get larger and larger. So this is a small step forward in what's going to be a large battle. So I do have a testifier, Mr. Chair, and I'm open for questions as well.
Thank you. Commissioner.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. It's good to see you. Good to see the committee. I want to thank Representative Rosenthal for authoring this legislation. You know, I've traveled across the state of Minnesota and done a lot of events to talk about senior fraud, senior protection. Most recently in Rochester, in Apple Valley, last week in Moorhead, and then I'll be at St. Cloud later this week. And these are educational events to share with seniors how they can protect themselves and their money from financial fraud. At Commerce, we have stepped up our investigations and enforcement actions for those who take action or who take investment fraud actions against those folks who are vulnerable, our senior citizens. We work closely with law enforcement at the local, federal, and the state level. And to deliver the message of fraud prevention, we also work in partnership with the Adult Protection Services and the Department of Human Services, with consumer groups like AARP, who I see is here today, and the Minnesota Elder Justice Center. We also work with industry and professional groups like financial planners, community banks and the credit unions. In short, protecting seniors from financial fraud is a top priority for the department. We're doing everything we can. What I hear over and over again, though, is what can we do to help prevent it and how can we stop it? So awareness and education is information. A strong defense, as we all say, is the best offense. The goal of the legislation is to give seniors and their loved ones the tools to stop financial fraud before it starts. So the outreach campaign would have two prongs. First, a statewide media campaign with public service announcements and all, warning seniors of the threat. And second, what we call a ground campaign, where we would go out and about to living facilities, senior living facilities, caregivers, and others to do a sort of an all-hands-on-deck approach. I thought I'd stop and give you just the gist of how serious a problem this is. To show basically our seniors have a target on their back. It's estimated that one out of every five seniors has been a victim of financial fraud. Older Americans are defrauded nearly of $3 billion each year. And seniors can be vulnerable due to isolation, cognitive decline, physical limitations, Alzheimer's, and a lot of other reasons. And criminals know it. The senior citizens have the greatest amount of wealth right now in U.S. history and therefore in the entire world. And when I'm out talking to seniors, not only are they sort of the experts about what's being scammed and all that with the robocalls and all, but they also know that this is a fundamental fact. I say to them, Willie Sutton famously said he robbed banks, and they asked him why. And he said, because that's where the money is. And that's the reason why criminals are scamming our seniors, not just in the United States and from Minnesota, but from across the world. The threat is only going to grow. The senior population will double between 2010 and 2030, and criminals understand and know that. So a quick few stories about what we've done at the department to stop senior fraud. First of all, one example is a gentleman named Jeffrey Rodd. He's a former police officer and host of a radio show called Safe Money Radio. He took nearly $2 million, swindled it from a bunch of folks in Redwood Falls, using his radio station. Two of these individuals had invested their entire retirement savings, including the proceeds from the sale of a farm. It's not safe, and we need to take to the airwaves just like he did in order to help people and stop. In fact, I got on the radio, it's not in my talking points, the week after, the radio station apologized for giving him a big microphone and ripping off senior citizens in the community in southern Minnesota. The station apologized. The following week, we got 10 additional people who volunteered, either because they didn't know where to report it, but also because perhaps sometimes they're just ashamed of what happened. Another gentleman is Sean Meadows from Eden Prairie. He was recently sentenced to 25 years in federal prison for using his financial planning and asset management firm in a long-term Ponzi scheme. We worked with the firm that he worked with, collaborated with them. His victims were spread across Minnesota and Alexandria, St. Cloud, Nisswa, and the metro area. Instead of investing his client's hard-earned retirement savings, he used it for his extravagant lifestyles. Again, he stole more than $13 million from 100 individuals. We know that financial professionals, though, are not there just doing bad things. On the other hand, financial professionals have been very helpful. And before I conclude, I just want to give you this one example. There's many, many more where financial professionals have called the Department of Commerce to seek help with their clients. In this case, there was a Costa Rican lottery. Somebody thought that they were going to win $4 million, and the financial professional called us at the department to help stop it. She was about to cash out an annuity worth $250,000, and when we contacted the client, she remained skeptical. She really thought she won the $4 million lottery. The department contacted her bank. We obtained a freeze of her account. The money was not transferred, and the client called us later to thank us for what we did. It's these kinds of things. Before the money is stolen and sent to Costa Rica, Jamaica, or wherever, before the money is wire transferred, When we actually put somebody behind bars, we can't necessarily stop and get and stop the money from going out of the country. So the goal is to stop it in advance, to stop it and prevent it when we see it, and that is the object of this of the legislation. So before it's gone forever, we'd like to be out there and help stop these fraudsters. So thank you very much, and happy to answer any questions.
Representative Rosenthal, do you have any other testifiers?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe I do.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Jay Hoppola, and I'm the Outreach Director for AARP here in Minnesota. And we're here to testify in support of House File 879. We thank you especially, Mr. Chair, for hearing the bill and Representative Rosenthal for authoring. Well, AARP has embarked on an educational campaign to inform the public about the latest scams and the tactics con artists use to steal our money. We know we can't do this work alone. We often coordinate and act in partnership with the Minnesota Department of Commerce, law enforcement agencies, nonprofits like the Better Business Bureau, and the Minnesota Elder Justice Center. Because we know it takes a collaborative and a multidisciplinary effort to fight fraud. And over the past 2 years, AARP fraud fighter volunteers and our staff have held more than 300 community education forums across the state, and there are two things I can report to you. Minnesota seniors are being targeted by scammers, some people every single day, and most of our seniors here in Minnesota are unaware about how vulnerable they are, and their families are unaware about how vulnerable their loved ones are. And tragically, these schemes fall on seniors who are alone and isolated, so they're the people who are difficult to reach. They're not the people that you see at the community center every day. They're isolated by definition, and that's why the portion of the funding in this bill that would cover media outreach is so important, because it's how we can reach those isolated people. So we urge you to support this bill, which equips the Department of Commerce with the added capacity to fight financial crime and prevent the devastating financial losses that our seniors are facing.
This is a public hearing. Are there any other members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns of the bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion and move to member questions and comments. Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. Question for the commissioner, if he could stop back up for a second. I used to work in radio years ago, and we had to run a certain number of public service ads free. Is part of what we had to do. So my question to you is, when you do a series of ads, like on this topic, for example, on radio and television, do you have to pay for those ads, or are they run as a public service free of charge by the stations that run them?
Commissioner Rothman?
Mr. Chair, Representative, you know, we have tried to do this, and some other states have done it as well. It's not easy to get free airtime anymore. In fact, we've been using a free media campaign without having to buy PSA. So part of the funding would be to purchase airtime. Okay.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for Commissioner Rothman as well. A couple of questions. How did you arrive at the $500,000 figure? And secondly, when you're going out and about around the state, what kind of turnout are you getting at these educational meetings, and are the meetings exclusively to educate seniors on financial fraud, or is there other things that you're doing at the same time?
Commissioner Rothman.
Mr. Chair, Representative, on the latter question, we've done a variety of them over the years. The one, for example, in Moorhead, we had about 40 people that went up to the Hemco Center. We also did a radio show on that one, so that was actually, we covered the entire place. Rochester, I think we had about 40. There were 60 in Apple Valley. We've had upwards of 200, 250, and sometimes even 300 at some of these events. We go around, and then we also travel with work with Triad. And I do recall AARP's event, we had hundreds of people at the one in Minneapolis. So it all varies in the community. And then in terms of the breakdown or what it costs, our staff put it together in terms of having $104,000 for an FT staff person, $180,000 back to the question about airtime, about $140,000 for production in multimedia, and this would go for TV, online, print ad, print materials, et cetera, with our toolkit, and then $75,000 for internet and newspaper ads.
Further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to share an experience that my in-laws had, and in fact, it was a couple of years ago, and I was walking from the Capitol back to the state office building, and my mother-in-law called me in. Just for context, you have to know what she sounds like. Well, Connor is in Peru, and Connor was my college-age son at the time, and I had just talked to him. He's at NDSU, right? I said, oh, no, what's going on? And she said, well, he's in Peru at a friend's wedding, and they got themselves in jail. And so I sent $4,000 to bail them out. And I said, oh, man, Connor is at NDSU. I just talked to him. He's just walking from class to class. And so they, I guess that's called the granny scam. They called up. They said, hi, Grandma, do you know who this is? And it sounded enough like Connor, I guess, for them to say, well, hi, Connor. And then they proceed to say, now, don't tell Mom and Dad, right? But this is what happened. So that's a good example of what happens to some of our seniors. And these are college-educated people, but they reported to the local sheriff, and they were really targeting the town that my in-laws live in. This was in Iowa. But so they actually had the nerve to call back, and by that time, you know, they'd figured it out. But bad situation.
Thank you, Representative Scott. To the commissioner also, there was in 2013, there was the no transit or no transmit list that was implemented by this legislature, and I was wondering if you could give us just a brief update on where that's at right now and what your success has been with that in that regard.
Mr. Chair, the no transmit list, we actually wrote a letter to the legislature to give you a report. I'll follow up with you on that later.
So there's one pending?
There is a report that, mm-hmm. or a letter that we've written to the legislature to give you an update on that. I'm happy to provide that with you.
It would be good to get that information to the committee as we move forward, because as we know, protecting our seniors are probably our most vulnerable demographic here, and as Representative Scott has, illustrated to us, I mean, it's everywhere. The other question that comes up is we've got, we came to the $500,000 appropriation, and as I look here in Section 1B, I mean, you've got a pretty big to-do list here if you're talking about television and print and media and training and all of this. What is, in your estimation, the administrative cost of all this? I mean, how much of this $500,000 is it going to take to manage this $500,000?
Mr. Chair, we have already a small staff of communications. We would need one additional person that would focus specifically on this and then help us coordinate the events, coordinate the production, the all that, and getting the ads in place and all that. So that's what the 1FT, in terms of administration, is meant to do. We already have a lot of it in place, but we can't be that specific and targeted.
Would any of this funding go towards more investigations or prosecution?
No.
No. Okay. Thank you.
Well, let me just say this. What it'll do is most likely result in additional stories and things like that. Every time I go speak, people come up or they'll say, I've got this heart-wrenching story. Can you help us with that and all that? These dollars won't go towards paying for an additional investigator or anything like that, but I'm sure as we broaden it out, we'll learn more, and we will probably have more investigations.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any further member questions? Seeing none, Representative Rosenthal, you have the last word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a growing problem, and this is a small step forward, and I ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, we will lay that over for possible inclusion in a later bill.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Then we have on deck, we have Representative Tice, House File 792. This is the Bill, you're looking to go to government operations, I believe. And we would have, the chair would move House File 792 upon passage to go to government operations. And Representative Tice, you have a DE amendment here you'd like to move to get your bill in the shape you'd like?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Tice moves the D, or I'll move the DE1 amendment for, on behalf of Representative Tice to get the bill in the shape that she would like it to be in. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Representative Tice, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill is basically to correct, I don't want to say a wrong, but to correct a boo-boo so that the state of Minnesota can get back to building twin homes and doing them the way they should be done. I know it sounds kind of goofy, but if you're in the construction industry, you probably realize that there is a big difference between a townhome, a condo, and a twin home. What this does is make it a little bit more expensive to do a twin home. Twin homes are bid more on affordable housing. We're hearing that there's so many housing issues, and in fact, I think, hopefully, Representative Lean will come and say a little bit about what's been... Representative Lean is here. But he'll talk a little bit about what's going on in his area in Moorhead. But I will also say that in the St. Cloud area as well, we aren't seeing as many twin homes being built. And twin homes are usually considered more affordable, not only for maybe a first home or a second home, but also for folks that are aging. Aging in place does a lot of twin-type homes. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Remy Stone, who will give you a little bit more information.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Remy Stone with the Builders Association of Minnesota. As Representative Tice mentioned, we have been we've been seeing a loss of affordable housing in the state of Minnesota, particularly the smaller properties that that are market rate and available for purchase. And so the way that this bill came about, in 2006, we had a change in the definition of townhome, and a townhome used to be defined as three units or more, and in fact, in the International Building Code and in the Fire Code that Wayne will talk about perhaps, in Minnesota it's still defined as three units or more, except for in the Residential Code. And the reason why I mention that is because when we adopted the 2015 Building Code, it included a variety of code provisions that really drove up the cost of housing, and in particular the twin home product, because it was lumped in with the townhome definition. So we went through a series of discussions with the Department of Labor and Industry and others, and at the end of the day, we realized that we needed to come to the legislature to have a resolution so that we can get this product back in the market. Representative Lean will tell you about what's going on in his community, and when he does, I want you to realize that what he describes is being replicated across the state. So this is a very serious issue. To the amendment in front of you, the bill, as was introduced, simply would have changed the definition of townhome. But as we discussed with a variety of members and with the Department of Labor and Industry and with our friends at the fire service, we concluded that that might be a blunt force approach to dealing with a huge cost driver in that product type, and that while we wanted to get rid of the largest code provision that was pricing those homes out of production, we needed to maintain some of the passive design standards that maintain that home as a safe and healthy, independently owned product. So the amendment that you have, the first part of the amendment corrects, it directs the commissioner to do expedited rulemaking. And with the expedited rulemaking, the commissioner will correct the result of a Court of Appeals decision that happened in October of 2015. And then it will also direct the commissioner to not enforce a sprinkler provision on twin homes until such time as the rulemaking is complete. I want to put on the record that what we have also been seeking from the commissioner is an immediate stay. And so if that stay does arrive in writing before us, and I believe Wayne will confirm this, we will work with the authors to potentially remove that Section 2 of the amendment. But
welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Wayne Kiewicz. I'm Fire Chief for the City of Richfield. I represent the Minnesota State Fire Chiefs Association, the Minnesota Fire Department Association, the Minnesota Chapter of the International Arson Investigators Association, and the Minnesota Fire Marshals Association. I would like to concur with what Ms. Stone said. We did work with them on this, despite what everyone may think about the fire service and the builders in our long-term relationship. We did find common ground on this because the Minnesota Residential Code does, the definition is different in the International Residential Code and the Minnesota State Fire Code that was recently adopted, the 2015 version. It is causing confusion, not only in the marketplace, but also for building officials and fire officials across the state. In light of the appeals court decision, two-unit townhomes would not meet the requirement to be sprinkled, and that's where we're, and we also have a very long-standing belief in making changes in code through rulemaking rather than statute. So that's where we're at with this. And I received an email today from the Department of Labor and Industry that said they are working on administrative moratorium on that would cover Section 2 of the bill, and we anticipate that if that moratorium comes through, that that will be removed from the bill.
Representative Lane, you wish to add any additional comments?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I appreciate you allowing me to jump in here and represent Tyze. I appreciate you taking the lead on this and everything. I just briefly wanted to tell a little bit about what's happening in Moorhead with the twin homes. And these homes are largely, you know, we're talking workforce housing or affordable housing. I mean, that's exactly the function that these twin homes serve. It's people my age looking to begin their first starter home, looking to start out, starting their families. And so just taking a look at some of the numbers, in 2014 and 15, both years, Moorhead saw 48 permits for these twin home starts. And then taking a look at 2016, that dropped down to four permits for starting. Compare that to what's going on across the river in 2014 and 15, we saw 30 and 52 respectively, and then 82. So I think there is, I think you can draw from that people may not necessarily be leaving Moorhead for Fargo, but it's just that they're not coming to Moorhead, you know, and they're looking for those, like I say, first-time starter homes. So with that, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to kind of tell the story about what's happening in Moorhead related to this policy. Thank you.
Representative Tice, do you have any other testifiers?
I do not.
This is a public hearing. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns with the bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion and move to member questions and comments. Questions or comments from members of the committee? Representative Howell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And is it possible that we can call down the state building official, Scott McClellan?
Mr. McClellan here? You can come on down, sir. Good. Please raise your right hand. No, I'm just kidding. Representative Howell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McClellan, did we not have a meeting in my office with regards to this very provision? And can you tell me what you told me during that meeting?
To the testifier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Howell. We did discuss a number of issues this past fall, right? And we discussed this issue as well. Did you have something in particular, Representative Howell, that you'd like to discuss?
Representative Howell.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I remember quite clearly that I asked you to take and clear this up administratively at Department of Labor and Industry. And you told me you had no appetite for doing that. You'd rather see it done through statute. I guess I'm questioning why now is there a change of heart between then and now?
To the testifier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Howell, I don't recall having that specific type of conversation. We did discuss this bill. I don't make decisions on behalf of the department. We have been approached by the Home Builders Association on this bill, and we've then recently learned that the fire service had an interest in supporting this bill, so the department is willing and committed to make this work through the rulemaking process.
Representative Howell.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess with my experience both in the fire service and also in the building official realm. I look at these two, and I really have a huge problem with the DE amendment. I think it's muddled. I think it's confusing. Where the definition change, which would have brought it in line with the other two codes, would have solved the same issue, and it would have been much quicker, much more succinct. The only thing that this original House File 792 is missing is a sunset clause to sunset it with the current edition of the code. So when replaced by the next edition of the code, this would be no longer in force. I see nothing of that in the DE amendment. So my concern is this is going to be done. This is going to be done in statute. It's going to stay in statute. And although you're talking about doing it in rulemaking, which I agree, it should be done in rulemaking. But the problem is that you've had almost a year to do it in rulemaking and it hasn't been done. So I guess I don't see. I'm concerned that there's other movement afoot here rather than being a clean movement to just change the definition and bring it in line.
That's the fair wish to respond.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Howell, a couple of good points you brought up. Number one, the reason we don't want to change the definition of a townhouse is because there's already an established precedent that the real estate industry wanted two units to be marketed as a townhouse and to be able to be sold that way. And we don't want to disrupt that. Number two, if we did eliminate the definition of a two-unit townhouse, we would lose a lot of inherent required fire protection that the code affords townhouses. And in the model code that we adopt, a two-unit building such as this falls through the cracks, and there is not a good way to regulate it. So the department was open to this, but at the time you and I discussed, the fire service had not demonstrated any support for not for changing this. And since that support has been demonstrated, the department is open as well to make this change.
Representative Howe, any closing comments?
No, Mr. Chair. I just hope that we continue to work on it because in my experience, I don't like the process that this was done in. I think there's a much cleaner way to do it. And I think this is just opening it up for bad things to happen in the future.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, there's some things that come with being here a while. And there's an old story of a legislator that that was carrying a code bill. And it was read so well by all the other members of the legislature that there was a particular piece of property that was exempted from all building codes, all zoning codes, all inspection requirements. You could have built an IDS tower in this particular piece of residential property, and there would have been no recourse to anyone. And that is the reason that we do these bills by rule rather than by statute. And I mean, I understand your frustration having done building code stuff around here, but that really was kind of an example to other members. And so it's really a much better way to do it through statute, through rulemaking, so that people actually have to see. People who deal with it day in and day out actually have to see it. And believe me, the other story I will tell is when Phil Klinke and I both agreed on something and the speaker, Mr. Swigum, dropped everything he was doing and at the moment said, I think we need to vote on this bill now. Because we used to have long, drawn-out fights like we will have yet this year over mundane things in the building code that no one would understand but maybe three people on the House floor. And I will say I worked pretty hard and got the acquisition of Mr. Krinke to agree that this stuff should all get off the House floor because it's not a good spot to do it. Having said that, I will say that it'll be interesting to see how the governor, who has always been a protector of sprinklers will take to this bill. And then my last question for the author is, who's going to pay for expedited rulemaking? I think that's about $100,000. Are you going to bring a bill forward to pay for that in excess funds? Is the department expected to absorb that, or is there going to be a charge on building permits?
Representative Tice, because this is a delete all amendment, we haven't gotten a fiscal note yet on it, so I don't know what the cost would be. I certainly defer to Representative Mahoney's experience on it, but if an appropriation was added to this bill, it would need to come back to this committee. If after this committee takes action on it, if there is a fiscal note, it'll need to be accounted, and this will be accounted for in the jurisdiction of our committee as well. Representative Tice, did you wish to add anything to that?
Mr. Chair and members, I was not aware that there would be a fiscal note. I have not heard anything about it. I definitely will come back if it is shown that there is a fiscal note, so you'll see me back here again.
Okay. And we'll just, presumably the department's watching, and if the delete all amendment triggers a fiscal note, they'll let us know. So, Representative, seeing no closing comments, Representative Tice, you get the last word.
I just want to make housing great again and bring back affordable housing. That wasn't intentional. I'm sorry. That came out wrong. I know he was shaking his head, but that's not what I meant. What I mean is...
Yeah.
How
to kill a bill in 5 seconds.
I know. Nice. You guys, it's a long day, and I'm going to be here all night. So please, what I mean to say is, if this is better... Economists tell us all the time that when housing isn't doing great, our economy doesn't do great. What I want to see is to get back to the housing that we need, the housing that we're asked to provide, and to encourage folks to come here. Is that better? Thank you.
With that, Representative Neuberger renews his motion to have House File 792 as amended. I recommend it to pass and refer to the Committee on Government Operations. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay.
Nay.
The motion prevails. You're on your way to Government Operations. Thank you. Members, just some housekeeping matters. So the February forecast came out today. As soon as I know what the budget target is for this committee, I'll be sure to share it with members of both sides of the aisle. Just expect that March is going to be an exceptionally busy month, given the incredibly early deadlines that we have in this chamber and in the Senate. So just please plan accordingly for extra meetings, lengthier meetings, and possibly maybe even some stuff that's going to have to happen on weekends. So any other treats too, yeah. Anything else? With that, we are adjourned.